This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Winnipeg Jets score three unanswered in the third and waltz away with another victory here to go to 4-2-1. The final score here tonight, Winnipeg 4, Vancouver 1.
Our buddy Paulie Edmonds with the call from Thursday night's Jets victory over the Vancouver Canucks. A sluggish 40 minutes leads to a dynamite final 20 for the Winnipeg Jets and a 4-1 victory in their back pocket. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by analyst Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to Dave, good morning to Ezzy. Gentlemen, nice to see you on this Saturday morning. A Winnipeg Jets homestand, it's a six-game homestand. They've played half the games and have taken away a 2-0-1 record thus far, which is pretty good considering they haven't really played all that well in the course of those three hockey games.
Yeah, not too bad. Buff comes back. He gets a goal and an assist. The Brian Little, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers line, that line had 6 points. And, you know, that line has been pretty hard on themselves. And that line has been criticized by us and, you know, the fans. And the Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler line, Drew, has really been driving the bus offensively. And, you know, we've talked about it here the last couple of weeks. I thought Brian Little, you realize he hit the crossbar there and he could have had another goal, but I thought he really elevated his game there in the third period.
Thursday night against the Canucks, you're saying.
Right. And, you know, that second period, let's be honest, I mean, that was
awful.
A terrible period of hockey. I mean, it was a chess match, but no pieces were being moved.
Hang on. How long have you been working on that line for?
Not at all, actually.
No, you just came right to your mind? Oh, look at
stream
you
of consciousness, Drew.
Man, oh God, that's better than your normal stream of consciousness, which usually is just food.
Exactly.
Anyways, Dave, to Ezzy's point there about the Thursday night effort, that second period was absolutely horrendous. And then in the third period, the Jets flipped the switch and they started skating again. And you could see that the Vancouver Canucks, when the Jets started skating, the Canucks had no answers for the Winnipeg Jets because the Jets are a significantly better team than the Canucks. Why did it take them 40 minutes to show that? I don't know. And that's probably a little bit concerning, but at least the Jets did find that, you know, they found that on switch to really make it, to take a stranglehold on that game, leading to the 4-1 victory on Thursday night.
You know, Drew, I don't know that it is that concerning. I'll be honest with you. I think that fact is that this is, everybody expects the same success this team had to conclude the season, obviously with the exception of losing to the Knights. But the fact of the matter is they were gelling, they were firing, you know, that Nashville series was incredible. And I think that folks come into this season and they thought to themselves, okay, the Jets are going to literally just pick up where they left off. And that just never happens. And the truth is you have some new personnel in the lineup and you have some guys who aren't playing to that same level that they were at to close the season. And so there's going to be hiccups like this. And I think part of what we're seeing is that this is a team, you know, especially with guys like Jack Roslick now taking the opportunity to be at center, and you've got, you know, the little Ehlers and Laine line kind of working on that sort of chemistry, you know, that they've been, apparently they didn't have last year, but they seem to be kind of gelling a little bit more this year. I think that's what we're seeing. I just think that we're seeing a team that's getting to form a nucleus. And I think that, you know, again, I think you just can't expect them to go right back to the success they were having because it's a new day for this Winnipeg Jets team this year.
And Dave, coming off of that horrible beatdown, I shouldn't say beatdown, horrible
third period.
Come from behind loss.
Horrible third period.
Right. Coming off of that loss to the Oilers, sometimes I think a win like this is more beneficial to a team's psyche. And what I mean by that is I think if the Jets came into this game and, you know, they hammered the Canucks 7-1, I think the fact that they had to fight through some sloppy play in the second period, and that was both teams. You know, both teams struggling to connect on passes, kind of the simple things of hockey. And I think the fact that the Jets had to fight through that and they kind of had to grind out a win, and that's really what they had to do. Before Brian Little scored that goal early in the third period, the Jets didn't have a lot going on. I'm not saying that they didn't have scoring chances, but it was just one of those, it was almost like one of those Sunday afternoon games. It just didn't have the same intensity as the game against Edmonton had, or certainly Dave mentioned the Nashville game. I mean, that was the most intense game of the year because the Jets and Predators are such big rivals. But I think the fact that the Jets had to kind of go through, you know, a little bit of a sloppy second period and dig deep and kind of eke out a win, I think is going to serve them better on this road trip. Even though Arizona, you expect them to win this afternoon, you've got two games coming up against St. Louis and Toronto. St. Louis is not off to a good start.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets have already beat the Blues in their home barn.
Mm-hmm.
And we know the Toronto Maple Leafs are one of the hottest teams in the league. So the homestand is going to end with a couple of hard games. But I think I agree with Dave. I wasn't too worried about that Edmonton game, because if the Jets end up winning that game and then they're, you know, 3-0 on this homestand, we're probably not having this conversation.
Well, I think the problem that people are pointing out is that they really have, they're 2-0-1 on the homestand. So, you know, undefeated in regulation, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that of all the games on the homestand, they've only really played what you're gonna, what you would typically call Jets hockey in one period, and that was that period Thursday night, the third period against the Canucks. And, you know, to me, that showed the Jets, you know, after 40 minutes on Thursday, it's a 1-1 game. The Jets certainly wouldn't be happy with the way they've played. That second period was pretty awful, to your point, Ezzy. But then they come out in the third period, and that's the way they need to play. And maybe it's a reminder that when we play with speed, and we play with speed against a lesser opponent, all due respect to the Canucks, but they certainly are a lesser opponent than the Winnipeg Jets, when the Jets play to their potential, very few teams in the league can match up with them. So maybe they needed sort of a reminder that this is how our game has to look for us to be dominant, because they were dominant in that third period, and they got rewarded with it on the scoreboard.
I also think we saw the return of Dustin Byfuglien and what a big impact he can have on a game.
No doubt.
I think that, you know, you see the things that 33 does when he's on his game that, you know, nobody else in this league really can do. It's amazing what he is as a defenseman, and sometimes you take it for granted. But then when you see him come back and have an impact like that, you know, you realize that he can be such a big asset for this squad.
And I think it has to be mentioned, Drew, you know, when you look at a game like this, a game that was tied going into the third period, special teams, again, played a crucial role.
Sure.
I mean, the Jets score on both of their opportunities. There weren't a lot of power plays in this game.
Yeah.
And the Canucks, when they had their penalty kill, pardon me, when they had their power play in the second period, that was a big kill by the Jets. I forget who got the penalty for the Jets. But
Tyler Myers took two penalties back-to-back. One, the retaliation after Perreault was knocked into the boards, and then he took a goaltender interference penalty that was a little chintzy, I think, was the safest way to refer to it.
Right. So when you kill off those penalties, when it's a close game, I mean, that's huge. And the Jets penalty kill, we talked about it, the game against Nashville, best example, you kill off all eight penalties in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nine penalties, if I'm not mistaken, in that game. So the penalty kill's been great. The power play has been very sharp. I mean, Patrick Laine, I mean, he made it look effortless when he scored on the power play.
And he missed right. The point blank opportunity right before that.
Right.
But second, I mean, he's not going to miss multiple opportunities from his wheelhouse.
Right. And it was kind of a, you know, awkward position he was shooting from. But we know, I mean, Patrick Laine can shoot the puck from anywhere. So special teams were huge on Thursday night against Vancouver. And I agree. I thought the home opener against LA was a very strong effort by the Jets. I thought that they could have won that game by much more than one goal. And then the game against Carolina, coming off of a game the previous night, Carolina had won the previous night. I thought that the Jets were definitely giving up too many high danger scoring chances. There's no doubt about that. The game against Edmonton was not a full 60-minute effort. So I know what you're saying. The Jets have had some periods of games here on this homestand where they haven't looked tip top, and you have to clean that up. And against a team like the Arizona Coyotes, that even though they just scored their first even strength goal of the season, actually they scored four even strength goals
on Thursday night against the Blackhawks,
it's still a much improved team from last year. You've got guys like Lawson Crouse and Dylan Strome. It's a young, hungry team. And even though I think the Jets are going to beat the Coyotes, just because the Coyotes don't have the high end skill that the Jets have, you got to come out with a full 60 minutes. I realize that, Drew, that's what you saw from the Jets last year. You saw the the same team period after period. This year, we've seen them fall asleep at times.
Yeah, you've certainly seen them periodically at best. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. But to your point, Ezzy, you know, you're absolutely right in that the Jets haven't put together that full effort. Maybe the game against St. Louis was probably one of the best efforts of the year. And even the game against Los Angeles, they did a very good job sort of shutting down the LA Kings, who aren't an offensive dynamo by any stretch of the imagination.
I really like the game against Nashville as well. I mean, that's a game that the Jets could have won if, you know, you get a break here or there. But yeah, I mean, you look at the record, and I think this time of year, everybody looks too much at the records. And what I mean by that is, if you're just looking at records, then Montreal's making the playoffs, Ottawa's making the playoffs. I mean, it's still very early on here.
Sure.
But this is a very important stretch. Like I said, I mean, you expect to beat the Coyotes, and I think the Jets expect to win every game. But those games against Toronto and St. Louis are going to be key, because those teams are going to be hungry to beat the Jets.
Well, especially that game against Toronto on Wednesday is going to be that's a marquee game on the NHL calendar. I mean, we remember what happened last year when the Leafs visited Winnipeg, and it was the season opener where the Jets came out like a house on fire, couldn't get anything past Freddie Anderson, and then the Leafs ended up blowing the Jets out of the water.
And you're going to face the Leafs again next weekend.
Or next Saturday. So, right? I mean, you have two marquee spotlight games. You want to be considered the best team, certainly in Canada, in the NHL. The Leafs would say, certainly on the way they've started this year, where they've already got the parade route planned and everything else, that the Leafs are the best team. So you have two opportunities, Wednesday and Saturday, where you know you have the spotlight firmly on you, and statement opportunity games before you head overseas to Finland to play the Panthers, not next weekend, but two weekends from now.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, you can't be looking past Arizona.
Absolutely, you're right, Dave.
And that's one thing that, you know, you'll talk to the Jets about. And I think, I really do think part of this is a mental thing. I think part of this is, you know, and Connor Hellebuyck talked about it a little bit about at the beginning of the year, right when it kicked off, about how it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a long year, because, you know, these are guys who are still coming off, probably a lot of them are still dealing with that loss to the Vegas Golden Knights in the Western Conference Finals.
Still sour taste in their mouth.
But even then, it's just the idea that, you know, it's like one of those things when it's interesting, because, you know, Blake Wheeler talked about it a little bit the other day about how it wasn't that long ago that the Jets were a team that people took lightly, like the way we're talking about Arizona, the way, you know, we talk about the Canucks. And now that, you know, the shoe's on the other foot, but the Jets still have a memory of what that was like to be that team, and how you would go into another team's barn and play your heart out because you knew that, you know, people took you lightly and other teams took you lightly. Part of this is, on the Jets, is how much of it is knowing that they have an expectation they're going to be in the playoffs, and that it's going to be a long grinding 82 season, you know, regular season, and it's going to be it's maybe tough a little bit to get up and excited for the games against the Vancouver Canucks. Again, I'm not saying that they're taking them lightly. I think it's just the overall task of playing 82 games to get to the playoffs. It's almost like they want to hit the fast forward button.
Well, sure. I mean, I think I saw a line yesterday somewhere online that the Jets season starts in April.
Right.
As opposed to in October, because, you know,
and
that's being a little, you know, tongue in cheek, because you can't completely sleepwalk through the regular season. But truthfully, the Jets expect to be in a playoff spot in April, and that's really where the games are going to take on their most significance for this team.
And I think that, you know, there's, you know, Coach Maurice has talked about this quite a bit, about how, you know, there's teams that, you know, go as far as the Jets did, the Ottawa Senators, for example, the Edmonton Oilers, and then miss miss the playoffs the next year. So I know the team is very wary against complacency and not going to allow that to kind of seep into the room. But at the same time, I think it's just the idea of a grind and how long a season is. And I think that maybe they're getting over that.
We shall see. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets' forward lines. We're going to talk about the decision to send Christian Vasilainen back to the Manitoba Moose. And we'll talk about Matthew Perreault and Jack Roslovic's comments that I thought were a little bit interesting this week. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Cross ice, Bufflin, and a big save. What a great pass from that far side. Vasilainen scores. Christian Vasilainen jumps on a loose puck and takes a high stick, but he gets it past Evan Dubnyk.
Christian Vasilainen scoring for the Winnipeg Jets in the preseason. wasn't able to duplicate that success during the regular season, and now he's a member of the Manitoba Moose, at least temporarily, for through the weekend. We'll see how long it lasts.
Look good so far.
Look good. You saw him last night. The Moose obviously victorious last night at Bell MTS Place, and they do battle again tomorrow afternoon. And he was sort of manning the Patrick Laine spot on the
opposite side.
The opposite side, of course. Okay, yeah. on the power play, though, but the mirror image, if you will.
It actually was. Like, they set him up on a very similar type play, and he blasted it wide, but it was like I said, it was a mirror image of what we see from Patrick Laine.
Well, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. With 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Some interesting comments. As we know, the Winnipeg Jets are a talented team that has, you know, really Paul Maurice has a litany of options top to bottom as to who he can send out. Some interesting comments from the Jets head coach yesterday, and then from both Matthew Perreault and Jack Roslovic after Tuesday night's game against the Edmonton Oilers. Paul Fries in the Winnipeg Sun wrote about this in his column today. That's available, of course, on illegalcurve.com if you want to find the column. You know, it's interesting. You know, he was asking Maurice about ice time, Paul Fries was, and Maurice's quote is, "This is not recreational hockey. You don't pay your $85 and get equal ice time here, man," which is a pretty good Paul Maurice quote if you ever had one. And then there's the chat that Paul Friesen had with Matthew Perreault after Tuesday night's game against the Oilers when he played less than 10 minutes. It was his fourth straight game at less than 10 minutes. He was able to exceed that mark Thursday night against Vancouver. But Perreault's comments were, "It's tough when you don't get out there that much. The last few years, for sure, I've never experienced that. You get one shift in the third, one shift in the second. I looked back. I had a shift at the 12-minute mark of the second, and the next shift was the 14-minute mark of the third. And that was it." Now, to be clear, Matthew Perreault says he's not complaining. "Not yet," he said. "It's early in the season. I'm here to win hockey games, so I'm never going to complain about myself. But when you lose a game like that, it's a lot tougher to sit there and watch it." So Matthew Perreault not complaining about his ice time, but Paul Friesen and Matthew Perreault having an interesting conversation about what it's like to have less ice time than you're used to playing after having been in double digits year in and year out.
Yeah, and I went back and looked at Matty Perreault's ice time from last year, Drew, and, you know, it's significant, right? You're looking at just Matt Perreault's last, you know, look at the last 10 games or so, 13 minutes, 12 minutes, 11 minutes, 15 minutes, 14 minutes, 57 seconds, 12 minutes, 15 minutes and 11 seconds. I mean, that's 6 or 7 minutes less ice time each game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're talking about this year, Matty Perreault's playing maybe 9 or 10 shifts a game, whereas he was playing 15, 17, 18, even as high as 21 shifts a game last year, right? So that's a big decrease in the amount of shifts and ice time he's getting. And that line right now, the Perreault-Roslovic line, along with Brendan Lemieux, was previously Vesalainen, that's the Jets' fourth line now. I mean, we've been calling it the third line because when you've got, you know, those high-end skilled players like Matty Perreault and Jack Roslovic, you'd expect that to be your third line. But the TLC line, Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp, that's essentially your third line just based on ice time. I mean, if you're basing it on the role and maybe their skill, you would say that's the fourth line. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot on Illegal Curve. You know, the whole first line, second line, third line, fourth line, that's kind of an archaic thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
You might as well just look at them like four lines. They don't necessarily need to be called, you know, third or fourth line. It's almost like 3A, 3B, right, Drew? But the point is, I think you're starting to see a lot of frustration out of Matty Perreault because Matty Perreault's a guy that, you know, he hasn't had a great start to the season offensively.
I mean, we talked about this when we did the over-under segment on the season premiere of NHL this week.
He's got one assist in seven games.
And last year, he only had 3 goals in the regular season from, I think, from January 23rd until the end of the regular season, he totaled a grand total of 3 goals.
Right.
So, all due respect, I mean, Matthew Perreault has been passed on the depth chart by a lot of other players who are right now more effective in scoring, more effective in checking. That's never been, I mean, that's never been his strong suit. He's not going to be a defensive shutdown guy.
Well, Perreault's a guy that gets in on the forecheck.
Right.
I just wanted to say something, though, Drew. I agree with you, but I think it's less so that he's been passed by other players on the depth chart And it's more so that Paul Maurice really likes to use that TLC line.
Well,
I mean, that their ice time has gone up.
Well, as it should, because they've been able to be more effective. And now, I thought Perreault, Roslovic, and Lemieux were good on Thursday night. Don't get me wrong. I thought they had their best game of the season on Thursday night.
Yep.
That being said, they are definitely, you know, the fourth of four options for Paul Maurice to send over the boards. Now, that's a function of Jack Roslovic being in his rookie year and Brendan Lemieux being in his sort of first, right now, extended opportunity to play at the NHL level.
They've got to be playing more than 7 or 8 minutes a game.
Well, they got up into double digits. The only guy who didn't get into double digits on Thursday night was Lemieux. And both Perreault and Roslovic led the Jets in Corsi 4 against the Canucks. I think they're up around 67% was their Corsi 4 on Thursday night. But, I mean, if you're Paul Maurice and you're sending your troops over the boards on a regular basis, just strictly based on skill, right now, that is your fourth of four options when it comes to forwards, Dave.
I'm more concerned about the fact that Paul Maurice thinks it's $85 to play recreational hockey. Like, how long has it been since the coach of the Winnipeg Jets?
It's more like $850. Yeah,
I thought to myself, boy, those are pretty good prices he's paying, but I think they're a little bit dated. You know what? I have to tell you, I respect Matthew Perreault. I think he's one of the most candid players that you're going to find in the NHL. He says what he's thinking. He really doesn't couch it in cliches. So I don't really have a problem with him saying this. And the truth is, he is a competitor. He's a guy who made it to the NHL. He was, I think, a sixth round pick. So I think he's a battler, and he doesn't, you know, you should want players to want more ice time. And they're not complaining. They're stating facts. I mean, it's, again, he's not saying anything that's an untruth. And he's not piling on the coach and saying, questioning his decision making. He's simply saying he wants to play more. And, you know, he's not a guy who's just happy to be in the NHL. He's a guy who wants to be contributing to his team. And if you're a member of the Winnipeg Jets, you really can't complain about the fact that you have a guy who wants more ice time so he can contribute. He doesn't want more ice time so he can get a bigger contract. He wants more ice time so he can help this team win. And so from my perspective, I never have a problem with these types of comments because I don't think I think it just shows a desire to play. And I think that's what you want from your team. I think you want Jack Roslovic wanting to get more ice time. Jack Roslovic was one of the top three players when he played that full season in the AHL. And so he's a guy who, okay, he's not going to necessarily dominate at the NHL level yet, but you see it. I mean, you see it with his skill. You see when he gets through the zone, his speed, his confidence. And so these guys want more playing time. I don't have a problem with that because I think, you know, from their perspective, they have something that they can contribute. And again, we're looking at the numbers. How do you look at Matthew Perreault's numbers and say, well, he only has X? Well, of course he only has X. Play two shifts. It's pretty hard to score any goals or get any assists if you play two shifts in two periods.
And that's my whole point. I realize that,
well,
you know,
Matty, the egg argument then.
Right. And Matty Perreault is not going to be, for the foreseeable future, on the first line or the second line. Unless there's injuries, Drew, he's not going to be on one of the top two lines.
Right.
But 8 minutes a game, 10 shifts, 9 shifts, 1 shift in the third period. I mean, I think you got to get him more involved in the game.
Well, so Paul Maurice spoke about that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290. Paul Maurice spoke about that, sort of how he runs the bench. And Maurice says there's a far greater variance in the game of young players. In this instance, he'd be talking about Roslovic and Lemieux. They'll go from flying one night to the next night, and they're not moving. I'll make a read fairly early on them, the coach added. And if it's not a favorable read, then I'm really careful. Giving them sheltered minutes, giving them sheltered time. I'm going to get them back out there, but I'm not working too hard to do it. So, I mean, Paul Maurice is saying, you know, you have to prove it to me really, really early in that game. You got to be flying from the outset, or you're going to end up being on the bench more often than not. So he's not really, he's saying about the young players, and Perreault is looped into this young players conversation by virtue of where he's playing in the lineup right now, that if they're not, you know, flying from the outset, it's going to be really hard for them to earn the coach's trust as the game goes on.
Right, and this line is still trying to find their chemistry.
Sure.
Right, especially considering that Vesalainen hasn't played the last two games, and it's been Brendan Lemieux, so that's part of it. And Matty Perreault and Jack Roslovic have not played that much together, right, Dave? Like a little bit last year, and then you're talking about seven games this year. So that line as a whole is trying to find some chemistry. And I think Matty Perreault is also trying to rediscover himself in this new role, right?
Sure.
I mean, he's being expected to play less.
Still
right?
playing like, second line net front power right. play, which is what Maurice says in one of his quotes. He says, you know, he calls him Frenchie because that's his nickname. You know, he's back net front on the other power play unit and he loves that hole. So he's happy there. What Frenchie wants to do is he wants to be part of something good. He wants to enjoy the game and plays with that energy. Thursday night against the Canucks, he enjoyed the game. They played at the right end of the rink. They had some chances down low. That's fun for him. And then Paul Maurice adds, and again, we're not staying healthy all year, so there's going to be lots of minutes for him. Sorry, as I interrupted you there.
No, it's okay. And I mean, Matty Perreault is going to score. I mean, this is a guy that's, you know, regularly put up 17, 18 goals. So he's going to score, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's this afternoon. But, you know, off to a bit of a slow start, and he's had rough stretches over the last few years, and he's obviously had some injuries as well. But, you know, he's frustrated, but he'll be fine.
Anyways, I thought it was an interesting sort of conversation, nothing that I would escalate up as to a debate or tension or anything along those lines, but a real interesting insight into how a coach sees a couple young players and then how one of those young players and his veteran line mates sort of see their role expanding. You can check that out, Paul Friesen's article, available, of course, on the Winnipeg Sun website, or you can find it through illegalcurve.com. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. Much more conversation to come about your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And, of course, our website with the latest Jets and Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome back to the program from the Winnipeg Free Press. He covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's our good friend, Jason Bell. Jason, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Always good to be here, guys. This is our chance to chat, because usually when I see you, we're far too busy at the candy line. So this is always nice to get reacquainted.
Yeah, we have actually a great CF, but for us, that actually means candy four, not Corsi four, when it comes to that.
Yeah, 10 seconds left in the first period. I usually vacate my seat and make my way upstairs. So
you gotta be first in line for candy.
I love those jujubes, Jay.
Yeah. you and McIntyre.
Jay, obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Jets. You know, 4-2-1 through their first seven games of the regular season. It hasn't been a smooth start, yet the record is pretty good. You know, do you think that the Jets maybe build on what was a very good third period on Thursday night and are beginning to find their game after sort of struggling for a few games in a row?
Yeah, and I'm a little bit in another camp when it comes to the Vancouver game, guys. I was actually was sitting elsewhere in the building, not in the press box that night, so I had a bit of a different angle. And I sat with a couple other fellas who were, you know, rabid Jets fans, and I sat quietly kind of taking things in. And it was I didn't sense great angst by people in that section and those fellas that I was with, and even in my own mind, thinking back to the characteristics of the Winnipeg Jets that we saw last year, I didn't feel like there was any great sense of dread in that game through 40 minutes. And I guess I kind of looked at it a little bit more, seeing some traits for the Winnipeg Jets that we came very accustomed to seeing last year, where there was really no panic, where they seemed to be in control. Yeah, it maybe wasn't the most high-flying brand of hockey that we're used to, but you know, there's such an opposite look and feel to that Edmonton game, where you just felt like, and of course, you know, Connor McDavid has such a huge impact on that hockey game, and anytime he's on the ice, and as we commented that night, I mean, it looked like there was about five 97s on the ice every shift, where it was only one guy, but he made it look like he was multiplying himself out there. But you always felt that it was kind of like, you know, even with a 4-1 4-1 lead, all of a sudden it's 4-2. That one was slipping away. Against Vancouver, I just felt like the Jets were always in control and were going to, as you guys suggested, maybe flip a switch and then they just sort of take control, and that's kind of what happened. So I guess I'm looking at it a little more like the Jets, not so much the Jets didn't play well, but the Jets played a controlled, no-panic style of hockey where they were kind of, they were biding their time, playing very, very, you know, pretty well defensively. There was a cute, you know, Josh Morrissey had a few giveaways that were uncharacteristics, and I thought Joe Morrow struggled a little bit in his own end, but I just felt like this was an opportunity that the club was biding its time and it was going to take over the hockey club, or the hockey game, and they did. So, I think they're starting to look a little, resemble a, you know, more of the Winnipeg Jets that we became very, very accustomed to seeing. You know, the offense is starting to go. They're starting to get some production from all four lines. You're starting to see a little bit more communication and good vibes from those defensive pairings. And Connor Hellebuyck seems to be settling in. So, you know, I think it bodes well for the rest of this trip, and it certainly bodes well for the rest of the season.
Jay, how surprised were you that Paul Maurice tapped Lauren Brossoit to start the game this afternoon against Arizona? Because before the homestand started, we thought that maybe Connor Hellebuyck was going to start all six of these games. Does that just show the confidence that Paul Maurice has in his backup goaltender?
I think it does, and it also, I mean, again, they're managing Connor Hellebuck's time, right? And we know that, you know, you've got a tough interdivisional game coming up on Monday against St. Louis, then, of course, the marquee game against Toronto on Wednesday, which Connor Hellebuyck will most definitely play. I would say win or lose against St. Louis, he's going to play against Toronto. And then, of course, you go in and have a couple of games, you know, Detroit-Toronto, and then the big trip. So, and they're going to have to manage some things there. And then do we see Connor Hellebuyck both games in Finland on back-to-back nights? Probably not. So, you know, I never try and do too much guessing on what Paul Maurice is going to do with his goaltenders. I did think we'd see him once on this homestand, and he played so well that it was probably worth giving him another look against, you know, no disrespect to Arizona, but maybe an afternoon game against one of the you know, sort of lesser thans in the National Hockey League and give Lauren Brossoit an opportunity.
You know, Jay, through the first seven games, Nikolaj Ehlers has no goals, and you spoke to him after the game against the Oilers where he was particularly hard on himself. Comes back, has two assists in the game against the Canucks. Do you see something in Nikolaj Ehlers? Do you think he's being particularly hard on himself because he isn't scoring, or do you think that he's kind of turned that corner and now he's starting to have a positive framework?
Well, I just think it's a kid with you know, a severe lack of confidence right now, and you know, he just, it's almost like he needs one of those. He wires a shot, Dave, and they, you know, how many times did it just go by the far post, or over the net, or a decent save by the goaltender? I mean, I think he's moving his feet better than he was before, and I think that he's, as Paul Maurice has been preaching over the course of the last few weeks, there seems to be this ability for the trio to sort of help each other out a little more. I mean, they're playing a little closer to each other, and they're able to dish off to each other a little more and support the puck down low. So, whereas they were all kind of flying in different directions there early in the season, and we kind of expected that too, because it's, sure, they played together a little bit last year, but it is, for all intents and purposes, a fairly new trio, and they all play these different styles, and of course, this has been documented many times before, but I mean, you look at a guy like Brian Little, who is so used to playing with the Andrew Ladds and the Blake Wheelers going north-south up and on their wings, and you got these two high flyers that don't keep the regular routes. So I think it was going to take some time, and I think they're starting to figure things out. Do I expect that they're going to get like 9 to this afternoon? I don't think so. I mean, I think people would like to see them create 5-on-5. It was great that Patrick Laine got his goal on the power play, and it was great that Brian Little scored, but I think they'd like to see a little more 5-on-5 production, and if they can get that line, you know, firmly entrenched in the offense, then certainly it takes pressure off the Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor line, which really wasn't particularly effective the other night against Vancouver. And that line is going to have those nights. I mean, they can't be firing on all cylinders every single night for 82 games. Or if they did, they'd all be 100-point guys. I mean, that's what Winnipeg Jets would like to see, but that may not happen.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290. We're joined by Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press discussing the Winnipeg Jets. Jason, Brendan Lemieux is obviously getting his first right now regular taste of action with Christian Vasilainen sent down to the Manitoba Moose. Do you think the Jets sort of need that sort of gritty element that Brendan Lemieux provides in his game, or does the Tanev, Lowry, and Copline sort of more than provide that element?
Well, it's a little bit of a different element. I know that obviously Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev are always hit leaders in most games and they lead the club in hits, and Andrew Copp actually was a little bit more feistier than we traditionally see him, and I don't mean on the forecheck or puck pursuit. I mean there was a few little pushes and shoving after the whistle, and I think Andrew Copp had some things to prove to himself. I know he was really down on himself after that poor penalty against Edmonton, and I just think he had a little bit more of a mat on. He was trying to keep it controlled, but so that line is obviously great playing against the NHL heavyweights, and they do their best work against those guys and can still keep the puck in the opposition's end and have actually started to create some offense this year. But Brendan Lemieux is kind of a different guy entirely, isn't he? He's really, you know, and he's made no bones about it. He feels like he has attributes that nobody else in the organization has. You know, he's got that snarl, but he's got, you know, we've been pretty impressed with the fact that he's got NHL speed. He's certainly got a great shot. I mean, a lot of guys over the course of the years that can score 40 goals in the Ontario Hockey League, but I mean that's still, you have to have a special skill set for that, and so he's got some of these NHL attributes, and he seems to be a quick learner. I mean, I think defensively he's been pretty sound, and I think he adds a terrific element to that fourth line. And if they continue to play like they did against Vancouver, their minutes are going to elevate. So I don't think it was a big shock that he didn't play much against Edmonton when that game was slipping away. We know who Paul Maurice counts on. But when things are under control and you can roll four lines, boy, that's a nice fourth line to have.
Jay, what's your read on Dmitry Kulikov right now? He's only played two games. He's been a healthy scratch for five of the seven games. The Jets brought him in a couple of years ago to be a second pairing defenseman on the left side. How concerned should we be that a guy who's making over $4 million a year has been a healthy scratch for the majority of the year?
Yeah, well, no, and as you kind of took the talking points there, I mean, he's just, you know, he's making a tremendous amount of money. He was a big July 1 signing in 2017, and at times I thought it took a month to settle in last year, but I thought he and Tyler Myers played pretty well at times, and I think, you know, he was a part of a pairing that played a lot of big minutes. They killed penalties, and really, you know, it was kind of a resurgence for Tyler Myers, and I think Dmitry Kulikov had a lot to do with that. It allowed Tyler Myers to maybe activate a little more and to get involved, and Kulikov stayed back and was, you know, I don't think he was as physical as I anticipated he would be or that he was maybe pegged to be. But I thought he had a pretty good season last year. The injury obviously set him way back, and then they, you know, was he going to have surgery? Was he not going to have surgery? Then, of course, he did have surgery, and then they had him come back for the playoff game, and he wasn't much of a factor. And, you know, obviously the healing process has been slow, but we have to anticipate that he's all healed up and he's good to go, and they just don't have, he either doesn't have the confidence in himself or the coaching staff does not have confidence in him. And they've elected to stick with Joe Morrow at this point. But you're right, it's a hefty contract to be watching from the press box. And the history of this club, though, is that the defensemen do go down with injury, and that, you know, that's just the reality. Nobody's hoping for that. Certainly Dmitry Kulikov isn't hoping for that. But you anticipate he's going to get his time, and we can probably anticipate that Tucker Pullman's going to get some time, too, if he's indeed the first call-up. Because, again, the history of this club is that blue liners go down.
So, Jay, you know, in the previous segment, we talked about Matty Perreault, and we talked about Jack Roslovic and how their line hasn't had a ton of minutes. Do you think that's a good sign, though, that these guys are talking about how they want more minutes, that they're pushing for that sort of, they have maybe a little bit of attitude, a little chip on their shoulder, because they think that they're entitled to play a little bit more?
Sure. I mean, I think that you know, I don't think any coaching staff would be thrilled to hear that I'm just happy to be here. and so, You know, but you have to, I guess, you have to make sure that you're not borderline insubordination. And I think that I thought the comments were tempered. The comments were respectful. And then these guys want to play hockey. You know, Matty Perreault is not used to that type of deployment. And he's, you know, he's been a top six guy at times, or certainly a top nine guy. And Jack Roslovic's young and has always played a whole lot, whether it was in college or whether it was with the Moose. And so, yeah, it can't sit well when you're sitting idly by watching the action unfold in front of you, even though there did seem to be yesterday a realization that it was the kind of game against Edmonton where they saw it slipping away, and they probably knew that they weren't going to get much time on the ice. So yeah, I like hearing that. As I say, as long as it doesn't push the envelope where it's almost disrespectful to your coach.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning, and we'll see you at the rink this afternoon.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
Take care, Jason. When we come back, we're going to preview this afternoon's Jets-Coyotes game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
2-on-1 the other way. Keller in over the line. And a shot and a goal. Lawson Crouse. And it's a 5-on-5 goal, Tyson.
The first one of the season, and it was pretty. This is as good as it gets.
Congratulations to the Arizona Coyotes. They finally scored 5-on-5. They did that on Thursday night against the Blackhawks, winning 4-1 in Chicago. Lawson Crouse, of course, getting that goal on a 2-on-1. So the Coyotes are off the schneid when it comes to 5-on-5 scoring. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. And this segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Shout out to whoever left those cheese pleasers in the lunchroom.
Cheese pleasers?
I thought it was a cheesy.
It's a cheesy.
They're called cheese pleasers.
Like, is that what the bag says?
I think it's a generic bag. That's probably why.
How long do you think those have been sitting there for?
I don't know, but
they're actually very tasty and very fresh.
It smells like artificial
cheese
now. It's 9:50
in the morning and you're eating cheeses.
Old Dutch makes them.
It's not the point.
They're not the regular. Don't think of a Cheeto. It's like a softer. It's like those softer Cheetos.
Ezzy, it's soft because it's old.
You're a soft Cheeto. You know that? That's what you are, is you're a soft Cheeto. Anyways, the Jets and the Coyotes, 3 o'clock this afternoon, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. And
Hawkins
watch.
Makes the best cheesies.
That's true. I would agree with that comment. The game's also on TSN 3 this afternoon. The Hawkins cheesies, Dave, are the really crunchy ones. Yep. They are the best ones.
Thank you. I'm aware.
Well, you gave a look to Ezzy like you didn't know what he was talking about.
No, I thought that's what we're talking about right now.
Well, I mean,
I kind of thought that was already over that segment.
Well, I would think so, but then...
I love cheesies.
Oh, boy. Are you done? Are you done, powdered cheese boy? Between craft dinner,
there's a reason I weigh 250 pounds.
It's not because of your muscle. Let me tell you that for sure. The Arizona Coyotes visiting the Jets this afternoon. You know, the Coyotes, obviously, as we mentioned, get their first 5-on-5 goal of the season on Thursday night. They've certainly been struggling early this year. They got a record of 2-4. This is a game the Jets should be able to. I mean, if you jump on the opponents early, you should be able to take care of business on home ice. The Coyotes are not a team that scores a lot. They just suffered another injury with Christian Dvorak going to be out of their lineup now. I'm not 100% certain. I got to look if Alex Galchenyuk's going to be back for today's game. We'll ask Craig Morgan coming up next segment about that. But Galchenyuk is very close to making his season debut for the Coyotes. If it's not going to be this afternoon, it's going to be certainly next week. But this is a game, much like the game against the Canucks, where the Jets Jets get an opportunity against a lesser opponent and really have a golden opportunity in front of them this afternoon.
Right, and you know, you mentioned the 5-on-5 goal, and we talked about it on Wednesday's show. It's pretty remarkable that they went 5 straight games without an even strength goal. The thing with this Coyotes team is, and you saw this towards the end of last year, Dave, it's a very solid defensive team. And that's one thing that the Arizona Coyotes have prided themselves on the last few years, and they've obviously had some struggles in net, but Antti Raanta was red hot towards the end of last year. And, you know, it's a good defensive group. I think Nicholas Jalmerson has really helped them there. Obviously, Oliver Ekman-Larsson is a guy that's going to play 20-plus minutes every single night. Mm-hmm. Jason Demers is a guy that I don't think gets a lot of attention, but Jason Demers was a very solid defenseman for the Sharks for many years, and he's a guy that I've always really liked. And, you know, you've got, you know, Kevin Connaughton and Jordan Osterley. Not a bad third pair, actually. And Alex Goligoski is the other defenseman that I didn't mention. But, you know, those injuries have certainly hurt them. I mean, that was the big trade for the Coyotes in the offseason, bringing in Alex Galchenyuk for Max Domi. And mm-hmm. it's kind of hard to believe that Max Domi is now playing center for the Montreal Canadiens when he was a winger for the most of his time. And Galchenyuk, they've talked about actually playing on the wing, even though he's a natural center, because they've got Derek Stepan and Dylan Strome right now as their top two centers. But there's a lot of young talent on this team, Drew. Obviously, you know, when you get onto the third and fourth lines, there's a bit of a drop-off, and you know, you can't compete with the Jets as far as the depth that they have. But it's a team that, you know, doesn't give you as much as you'd think on the defensive side of the puck.
They've only given up 12 goals in their 6 games.
That's what I'm saying.
They don't score a lot, and they don't give up a lot in terms of offensive chances.
Right, and you know, even going back to last year, mm-hmm. they were a stingy team, considering that they were one of the worst teams in the league, right? So
Antti Raanta was great when he came back from injury.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, they've had all types of problems in net over the years. But, I mean, this is a team that is still trying to find itself. I mean, I don't think it's a team that has an identity right now. They really don't. And until they start winning, and they haven't got off to the best start early on this year. You know, they've been competitive. But a guy like Dylan Strome, a third overall pick. I mean, this is a guy that they have really high hopes for. He was playing, Dave, in the AHL last year with Tucson. Same thing goes for Lawson Crouse. We played that clip at the top of the segment. I mean, Lawson Crouse is a guy, you remember, he was a first-round pick at the Panthers,
right.
And then he came over in a trade. And, you know, he's a guy that I would expect, you know, to be a 20-goal scorer, a power forward. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, people were talking about it possibly being a top 5 pick back in his draft year. So a lot of talent on this team, but I just still think that this is a team trying to find its identity, and it's a team that has to rely on a lot of hard work because they just don't have as many natural goal scorers as teams like the Jets do. Yes, Clayton Keller is a very good young player, and a guy like Michael Grabner offers some speed there on the third line. He's a sniper as well. And then, you know, a guy like Brendan Perlini is a very good player, but they don't have that high-end talent. So most of the time, as you mentioned, they're going to have to grind out those 2-1-3-2 wins.
Yeah, absolutely. As to your point, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. We're talking about the Jets and the Coyotes. They play this afternoon, Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. A game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Dave,
the Dave Bolin trade. Krause came over in the Dave Bolin trade.
The salary dump, the
right.
Coyote, that's what the Panthers had to get rid of Dave Bolin's salary.
Right.
So the cost of doing so was Lawson Krause, you know, which is a significant price to pay, given that he was, you know, to your point, as a former first-round pick of the Panthers before he was traded to Arizona. I mean, there's some talent there, like as he said, Dave. They just haven't been able to put all the pieces together, and you know, the offense is struggling. The defense is playing well because, you know, you do have Ekman-Larsson and you do have Jalmerson. And so those are two pretty good pieces right there. But everything else is sort of just a bit of a mishmash and a bit of a struggle early this season for the Coyotes.
Well, I mean, look, the reality is Rome wasn't built in a day. And this is a team that, you know, has been in a rebuild mode for quite a while. But, you know, the farm system has been very strong now with the Tucson Roadrunners, and they were the top team last season in the Pacific, and they're undefeated. They're 4-0-0-1 in early into this season. So this is a team that has some very good young talent, and I think, you know, again, you can't have it all. So, you know, you've got a good, solid defense. You got the goaltender that you wanted. Obviously, Raanta was hurt for a significant portion last season, which set them back. And I think, you know, their forwards are slowly shaping up. And I think that, you know, that seems to be the next aspect of the team that they're working on. And once they do, you know, the Arizona Coyotes will be a team to deal with. Again, it just doesn't happen immediately, you know, as much as you know, fans would like it. But I think that we're probably seeing something happen as they transition to a more powerful team.
Yeah, Dave, and if I'm looking at matchups for this afternoon's game, I'm thinking that Rick Tocchet is putting the Derek Stepan line up against the Scheifele line. That's Stepan, Clayton Keller, and Richard Panik. And
yeah,
obviously, you know, you mentioned Oliver Ekman-Larsson, the captain. You know, that top pairing with Jason Demers, and that was another player that came over from the Florida Panthers. He was traded for Jamie McGinn. That top pair is a solid top pair, and they're going to be tasked with shutting down the Connor Scheifele-Wheeler line, and that's going to be a key matchup for me because, you know, as we talked about, you know, with Alex Galchenyuk most likely still out of the lineup, after that top line, it really gets thin for the Coyotes. They don't have a lot of top-end talent, and so then you're going to probably see a matchup of, you know, Dylan Strome's line up against, you know, the second line of the Jets, Little, Lion A, and Ehlers. And to me, that's a big mismatch.
It's a very big mismatch. And then on the instances where the Jets, of course, they have last change being at home, are able to get the matchup they want, where they can get Scheifele and Connor and Wheeler loose against maybe somebody other than the Ekman-Larsson and Demers pairing, or other than the top center line of Derek Stepan, then you're going to really see a Jets advantage. I mean, the Jets should be able to, the majority of this game, just strictly based on talent on the ice, should be played in the Coyotes zone. The problem for the Jets is they've been a little bit maybe lackadaisical when it comes to using that talent. Do we see a carryover from the quality third period that they had against the Canucks against the lesser opponent, where they can do the same against the Coyotes and really take advantage of the talent disparity that is on the ice? We'll certainly know more by 6 o'clock this evening when this contest comes to an end, but Puck Drop is at 3 o'clock, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Craig Morgan of TheAthletic.com to talk more about the Coyotes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Craig Morgan. Craig covers the Arizona Coyotes for TheAthletic.com. Craig, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. Craig obviously brought you on to talk about the Coyotes ahead of their visit this afternoon to Winnipeg to face the Jets. And the Coyotes finally got that big monkey off their back on Thursday night against the Chicago Blackhawks, scoring 5-on-5, ultimately prevailing in a very impressive victory over the Blackhawks. How important was it for the guys in the dressing room to finally get that talking point out of the way and you know, as well as winning that game on the road against the Hawks?
I think more important than anybody was willing to mention, actually, it was really impacting the guys. Derek Stepan was one of the few guys who talked to me frankly about just how much it was on everybody's mind that they, you know, not only that they hadn't been scoring 5-on-5, they didn't have any 5-on-5 goals going into that game, but they just hadn't been scoring, period. They had been out shooting and out chancing every team they had played, but they just couldn't find the back of the net. So they were obviously struggling when you do something like that. So to get that monkey off their back was huge, and now they go into a place where they're going to try and get another monkey off their back. They haven't won in Winnipeg in a long time. I'm going through the stats right now. I still haven't found the last win, and I'm going back pretty far.
It hasn't happened. They haven't beaten the Jets since the Jets returned from Atlanta.
Well, there you go. Thank you. You're doing the rest of my research.
I'd love to take credit, but we had one of our listeners, a guy who listens to the show on a weekly basis named The Soch, tweet that at us earlier. So I'll give credit to The Soch for being my statistician you know, each and every Saturday.
And Craig, the Coyotes never beat the Jets 1.0 either.
You know, Craig, one of the things that you have when you have a young forward and Clayton Keller is sometimes there's going to be mistakes. You talked about how he made a mistake on the Blackhawks game tying goal on Thursday, but then Coach Tocchet said he'd get him right back into the lineup. You know, how important is that for young players, knowing that the coach isn't going to take them out of the lineup and allow them to kind of make those mistakes, but then get back in and, you know, redeem themselves, which he did with a goal?
I do think that's critical. You know, in the case of a guy like Clayton Keller, he knows he's going to get that opportunity because he brings such skill to this team, and they need that element. And I don't think some other players necessarily get afforded that opportunity when they make mistakes if they're, you know, lower in the lineup. But I really do think that is important, to be able to play through your mistakes. If you're always looking over your shoulder worrying about your ice time, or if you're just going to get yanked out of the lineup if you make a mistake, that's certainly going to impact the way you play.
Craig Morgan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, talking about the Jets and the Coyotes this afternoon, 3 p.m. at Bell MTS Place. You know, Craig, Dylan Strome is obviously sort of an interesting player for the Coyotes, a former third overall pick a few years ago, and we're so used to some young players just stepping into the lineup immediately and being impactful, and Dylan is certainly not done that. You know, that's not a criticism, that's just a reality. He's taken his time, he went back to junior, he played in the AHL last year. How has he looked in his first extended sort of six games this season, and is he now going to be a fixture in the Coyotes lineup game in, game out, for the rest of the season, as far as you can imagine?
Yeah, he's looked a lot better. He's worked on a lot of elements of the game. I think everybody has seen how successful he's been in the faceoff circle. He's been among the NHL leaders all season, and that's a nice skill to have. He's still learning, I think, to play and think the game at the NHL pace. There are times when he'll make mistakes or just won't make a decision fast enough. And that, I think, just comes with reps. But I think the biggest thing here is people need to let go of the expectation that he's going to live up to the two guys that went ahead of him in the draft, Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. He's just not that player. I think the Coyotes will be happy at this point if they can get an effective NHL center out of Dylan Strome. And I think he's trending in that direction. I don't know what his upside for productivity is yet, but he's showing some good signs. And you asked me if I thought he was going to be in the lineup for the rest of the year. With Christian Dvorak likely out, maybe for the rest of the season, or certainly for several months, I think so. At this point, they need him in the lineup because they just don't have other options down in Tucson.
Craig, wanted to ask you about Vinny Hinostroza. He was obviously part of that big seven-player deal this past offseason that included Marian Hossa being traded to the Arizona Coyotes, basically his contract being traded. But Vinny Hinostroza is a guy that, you know, he had some success in the American Hockey League. He put up some decent numbers for the Blackhawks. He's leading the Coyotes right now with two goals. Has he turned out to maybe be a better addition than maybe some fans thought when they saw the names that were coming over to the Coyotes in that trade?
Well, I don't think fans really knew a heck of a lot about Vinny because he didn't have a regular role in Chicago. He bounced around that lineup, and he talked himself about how difficult last season was in Chicago, not really knowing what his role was or what he was going to be asked to do on a nightly basis, where he would fit in. John Trico, when he looked at that deal, really thought that Vinny was undervalued in Chicago and thought he could bring something. To be honest, through the first few games, he didn't show much other than that, you know, that eye-popping speed that he has. He looked like there were times where his mind just wasn't keeping up with his legs on the ice early. So to get those two goals in Chicago against his old team was a big boost, I think, for his confidence. He needed to get something going. Like I said, though, up until that point, I don't think he had shown them enough. So maybe this will be the jump start on a better part of the season for him.
You know, Craig, one thing we've seen here in Winnipeg is how important it is to have a good farm club. And, you know, you guys in Arizona have a really solid one in Tucson, especially, you know, between last year and the season prior, where they jumped 24 points in the standings, won the Pacific. I think they're undefeated. I think they're 4-0-1 right now. Are there a number of players that, you know, fans in Arizona can look forward to joining the team, maybe not necessarily this year, but in the future, that are powering that club down in the AHL?
Well, if you're talking about depth players, maybe, but the interesting thing about this organization right now is there's a bit of a gap between, you know, their top prospects, who are all basically still in juniors, and the NHL club. Because this team has so many young players on the NHL club already, you really don't have that top-tier prospect down in Tucson other than potentially the goaltenders, like Aiden Hill, who is their top goaltending prospect right now. In terms of the forwards and the defense, it's more depth guys that you're talking about. Maybe a Nick Merkley, when he gets healthy again from his offseason ACL surgery, he could be a guy that could bring something to this lineup, even a little bit of scoring. And then on defense, a guy like Kyle Capobianco might be able to add some depth. But they don't have the high-end guys down there right now. On the flip side, they have the same kind of culture that they have up here, and that has been one of the biggest things that I think has been important for this organization. Not only is Tucson close so they can get those guys up quickly if they need a recall, but they're implementing all of the same systems. It's continuity throughout the organization, and that's been really important for the team.
Craig Morgan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Craig, Antti Raanta, when he was healthy last year, was absolutely fantastic for the Coyotes. 2.24 goals against average and a .930 save percentage. He started off solidly this year as well, a sub-2 goals against and a .921 save percentage. Is it time to begin to talk about Antti Raanta as an elite NHL goaltender?
I think so. At this point, you know, with the body of work that he put in over the second half of the season wasn't that short. I don't think you can say it's too small a sample size. If he played about 10 more games, he would have been in the Vezina conversation last year. And the fact that he's been able to pick up right where he left off says to me that this guy really has emerged and really figured out what he needs to do to be a number one goalie. There was a lot of talk about when he came in, first of all, his body wasn't in the right kind of shape. And I don't want to say he was out of shape. It's just that he wasn't doing the right type of training to withstand, you know, that 82-game grind of the NHL season. But he started working on it last season, really zeroed in on it this summer, and he looks like his old self, especially in that game against Chicago. He was just terrific, guys, and a big reason that they won that game because the Blackhawks really had a lot of good chances. He does look like the same guy, and I think he does more, mentioned in that conversation for the league's best goaltenders now.
Is it your expectation that he gets the start tonight for the Coyotes?
Yeah, I would think he'd be in there.
You know, Craig, this is the third season that John Chyka has been the general manager of the Coyotes. It's the second season Rick Tocchet has been the head coach of the Coyotes. How much pressure is there on this Coyotes team to make the playoffs? They haven't made the playoffs the last 6 years at least. Or is it similar to every other team in the NHL that is under pressure to make the playoffs? That's the goal at the beginning of the year. But specifically this team, who hasn't had, you know, a taste of the playoffs in a while, how much pressure do you think there is on this team?
Well, I think the fan base is certainly impatient at this point. It's been a long time. You know, you got a taste of what it can feel like when that team went to the Western Conference Final in 2012, and they haven't been back to the postseason since. But in talking about pressure, I think it's important to separate the past regime from this regime. John Chyka, when he took over, you know, two-plus seasons ago, embarked on a complete rebuild of the franchise, and that takes time. I know nobody wants to hear that, but realistically, it's really hard to say, well, why hasn't he produced results yet when you're stripping the thing down to its bare bones and starting over again? I don't think it's time yet to judge the job that John Chyka's done, but they certainly want to show progress on the ice. I think the real goal and something that they could probably hang their hat on this season, guys, is just being able to compete for a playoff spot, being able to play meaningful games in March. We all know what happened last season when they had that disastrous October and they were basically out of the playoff chase by Thanksgiving. That can't happen again. They need to show some progress on the ice. And, of course, going hand-in-hand with that would be finally getting healthy, getting Galchenyuk back in the lineup, getting Jacob Chychrun back in the lineup so that they can, you know, deploy the best pieces that they have and try and show that they are actually moving in the right direction.
Craig Morgan covers the Arizona Coyotes for TheAthletic.com. Craig, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you at the rink this afternoon.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks once again for having me.
Take care, Craig. Thanks again. When we come back, we shift our focus to the surprising Montreal Canadiens. Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com and TSN 690 joins us next. Much more to come on the Jets as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day, on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com and TSN 690, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Mark Dumont. Mark, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How's Winnipeg looking nowadays?
Winnipeg's looking nice and, you know, sunny today, although we are in a windowless bunker, so I'm not 100% sure if it's still sunny. How about Montreal? What's it look like? What's it like there?
No snow. So that's all I'm looking at. You know what? It's a beautiful day, and the Montreal Canadiens are playing well, so that makes it for an even more beautiful day in Montreal.
They certainly are playing well. I think most people would be surprised, given the off-season that the Coyotes had, that the Canadiens had, that they're 4-1 in the run through their first six games. How surprised are people in Montreal over the start to the season?
It's all about expectations, right? Right. Last year, there was a lot of disappointment because the team was supposed to compete. They failed miserably. Some people were frustrated. This year, fans had, especially considering it's Montreal, very low expectations. So this is a huge surprise to everyone. We thought they would be fun to watch, but they'd lose a little bit more. I'm not saying the Canadiens are a contender by any means, but if you look at all their numbers, their underlying metrics, this start has been legitimate. This is not a fluke start. The Canadiens are playing quite well.
Mark, wanted to ask you about Mike Riley. You wrote about him earlier this week. He was acquired this past February from the Minnesota Wild. Last year, he didn't get into a lot of games for the Montreal Canadiens. This year, though, he's found a regular role with the Canadiens. And, you know, for a guy that maybe the hopes weren't that high for him, because how pleasant of a surprise has he been for Claude Julien?
Well, the interesting thing is last year, we didn't really talk about it, but in 19 games with the Canadiens, Mike Riley had 8 points. So, you know, he was getting half a point per game as a defenseman joining a new system, which was already pretty good, but defensively he had issues. And those were the same issues we were seeing with the Minnesota Wild. At 25 years old, it's quite rare for a defenseman to suddenly flourish, but what's happened with Mike Riley is he's just, chock full of confidence right now. He's walking the blue line with the confidence of an Erik Karlsson type of thing. He doesn't have that skill, but he certainly believes in himself right now, and he's been one of the catalysts for the Canadiens scoring so much because he can transition that game up the ice so quickly. He's helping out a guy like Jeff Petrie, who's usually the only guy moving the puck, and there's a few other young guys that have been helping out as well, including Noah Jolson, but Riley has really been the standout defenseman for the Canadiens this year, and considering Desjardins paid a fifth-round pick, it seems to have been a very reasonable price to pay for a guy that's helping the team so much.
You know, Mark, with 8 points in his first six games, how good or how surprised are you with Thomas Tatar's play so far this season?
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't surprised. I don't think anyone was expecting this, right? We all thought that Thomas Tatar is going to kick in about 20 goals, going to be an annoying player that the coaches don't like because he doesn't try hard. Well, here's the thing. He's been giving it his all in Montreal. He's been forechecking. He's been backchecking. He's been winning puck battles. And, I have a hard time not looking across to the Western Conference and taking a look at Max Pacioretty's points right now, because one guy's doing very well with his new team and another guy isn't. Now, Pacioretty's going to pick it up at some point. But so far, Thomas Tatar has eclipsed his production. He did it in five games with the Canadiens. He had more points than he did in 20 with the Vegas Knights. So the reaction in Montreal is, why did Las Vegas give this guy away? In fact, they didn't give him away. Montreal had to essentially, they were paying to give him away. So all in all, another smart move by Marc Bergevin, who honestly, after a few years of struggling, has had a very strong offseason.
Mark Dumont is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. We're talking about the Montreal Canadiens and their impressive start to the season. Mark, we have to ask you about our old friend from here in Winnipeg. That's Joel Armia. He was, of course, acquired right before the free agency opened alongside Steve Mason, who was eventually bought out by the Habs. How has Armia looked in his first six games as a member of the Canadiens?
Underwhelming would be the word I would use. He's not playing poorly, but you guys would probably know this better than I. When you have a guy that has that kind of size, mm-hmm. When you have a guy that's that tall, he's 6'4", 200 and some pounds, you expect maybe a little bit more from him in terms of the physical side, a little more engaging, maybe making a little more space on the ice. Because if you're not using that size, well, it's going to waste. And he's been very good on the penalty kill, and that's something you guys saw in Winnipeg, shorthanded goals here and there. Him and Paul Byron create just such a dynamic duo during the penalty kill, which, incidentally, Montreal's been more threatening on the penalty kill than they have in the power play. But other than that, 5-on-5 play, Joel Armia has not found his stride yet with the Canadiens. He's got one shorthanded goal, and I think that's about it. So the good news is this team is... there's no elite players really on this team. They're so spread out in their offense that a guy like Armia has time to catch up. but he's at risk of becoming a healthy scratch because there's too many quality forwards for the Montreal Canadiens at the moment.
Mark, Max Domi got off to a bit of a rocky start with the Canadiens with that preseason suspension. I think that's putting it lightly, but he scored a goal in the big win over the St. Louis Blues last game. How has he fit in with this team? And going forward, do you think he's better suited as a center with the Habs, or do you think he's going to go back to his natural wing position?
Oh, God, we got rid of Galchenyuk, and I thought, hey, no more winger to center talk. This has been an issue in Montreal for so many years, but here's the thing. Max Domi is fantastic at pushing the puck up the ice. He's one of the better players in the NHL when it comes to primary assists. That's what he's done with the Canadiens. He's been setting up his teammates left and right. He's been really pushing the pace into the offensive zone. So he's fit in quite well. Now, the center question. I think he's better suited than Jonathan Drouin to play down the middle. From what we've seen from him, Domi is much more responsible defensively. The big question is if Jesperi Kotkaniemi goes back to Europe, or maybe even Laval, Domi and Drouin might both have to play center, and that's not ideal. But at the moment, if you have to pick one, you go with Max Domi because he's legitimately a very good playmaker.
You know, Mark, in addition to your duties covering the Habs, you also cover the Laval Rocket. You know, Laval had a poor season last year, but it looks, the 3-3 this year. Are there any players that fans in Montreal can look forward to seeing soon up with the big club?
Well, it's interesting because last year was about as bad as it got, right? And that was the end of Sylvain Lefebvre. Now they have a new coach, Joël Bouchard, who is, he's a bit of a journeyman defenseman in the NHL. And this guy is intense. He pushes guys. The other day he canceled practice after about 20 minutes. He basically said, hey, if you guys don't want to bleeping be here, then bleeping get off my ice. And I talked to the players, and they said, yeah, we deserve to get kicked off the ice there. We weren't trying. So it's a new reinvigorated squad. But here's the thing. There aren't any elite players, once again, with the Laval Rocket. They're missing so many second-round picks. Guys like Ylönen, Ikonen, Scott Walford, Josh Brook, even their first-round pick, Ryan Palin, from a few years ago. So once those guys join the team, then you'll have some elite players to look at. But for now, I'd say it's a very average-skilled team with high intensity. You'll see a guy like Brett Kulak, who played with Calgary last year. He'll make it up to the NHL. Jake Evans might as well. And Michael McCarron might get another cup of coffee in the NHL. But that's about it. Really, it's about team structure down there.
Last question for you, Mark, and we appreciate your time. Here in Winnipeg, we have a young Finnish rookie in Christian Vasilainen, and he was just sent down to the Manitoba Moose. In Montreal, you, of course, have a young Finnish rookie who's got two assists in his first six games. That's Jesperi Kotkaniemi. What is the plan for Kotkaniemi going forward, and is he going to be with the Habs for the remainder of the season, or do you think he's going to eventually be sent down to Laval or go back to Finland as a possibility?
It changes every day. If you would have asked me this 2 weeks ago, I would have said he's going back to Finland. And then about a week ago, I'm saying, no, he's staying with Montreal. Now I'm leaning maybe towards Laval because he's going to be too good for Finland. I know he only has two assists, but if you look at Kotkaniemi's play, he makes all the right moves on the ice. And this is a guy who's closer to 17 years old than he is to 19. So you have to keep in mind how tough it is to play as a young guy. The Habs love him. They are absolutely enamored with his defensive play. He's learning so fast. And the one thing he said at the rookie tournament, he said, after a poor outing, he said, I'll get better every day. And he was lying. He's getting better every shift. So he might go back to Finland. He might stay with the Canadiens. He might go back to Laval. I honestly don't have an answer for you. But right now, he's exceeded all expectations despite only having 2 points in six games.
I guess options are a good thing to have.
Yeah, especially, and the good news with Laval, it's only about, one smoked meat poutine away from getting to Montreal there, so it's pretty close, yeah.
Well, now you've made us hungry, but we'll forgive you for that. Mark,
sticking with the food, can you send us some Fairmount bagels?
Oh, God, no, because I'm a Saint Viateur guy, and that's a war issue in Montreal.
Yeah, those are good bagels, too.
I live in NDG, so I'm loyal to my local brand, but if I go into Saint Viateur, they'll shoo me out. Think of Gangs of New York, but with bagels.
Yeah, and the good thing from our perspective, Mark, is we're not picky. We'll basically eat any food that's sent to us.
Here's a dirty secret. They all kind of taste the same. Thank God this isn't being broadcast in Montreal because the police would be knocking at my door.
Yeah, we won't say anything. Mark Dumont covers the Montreal Canadiens for TheAthletic.com and works for our sister station, TSN 690. Mark, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Take care, Mark. When we come back, Manitoba Moose defenseman Logan Stanley is going to join us. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.